You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Our Dakota political junkies join us today with a news roundup from across the state. Seth Tupper is editor-in-chief of South Dakota Searchlight. He joins us from SDPB's Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. And Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the Dakota Scout. He is with me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls.
At South Dakota Searchlight, we're part of a national nonprofit called States Newsroom, and States Newsroom has 39 state outlets, including South Dakota Searchlight, and we get together, the editors get together every year with our D.C. Bureau folks that we have and our HQ staff, and so there's about 50 people, and usually they've met in D.C. They decided this year to have it more like in a regional airport hub that would be more centrally located for everybody to fly to, and they chose Minneapolis, and since we're a state-focused nonprofit, state news, they decided to see if we could get the top state officials from Minnesota to come and do a live Q&A with us as journalists. And so we got Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota and the Attorney General, Keith Ellison, and they sat in for a live Q&A in front of us. And then the state's news outlet in Minnesota, the Minnesota Reformer, did some stories on those appearances.
So how much was... unpack the election and how much was, what's happening now in Minnesota?
The Walz appearance was almost totally unpacking the election, and you and everybody else has probably seen he's been on something of a tour lately. I think he was in South Carolina, and he's clearly, signaling and thinking about, running for president next time. That was an interesting appearance because, I'd never had, met Tim Walz or covered him personally or anything, just, seen him on TV, whatever, like everybody else. And in person, he's just, I guess I would describe it as just him being in a really awkward place right now where he, is so clearly interested in running for president again, yet so clearly also carries the baggage of being on a losing ticket from last time.
Sure.
It's just, you almost feel the unease when you're in the room with him of him trying to balance these two things, and not quite really knowing how to try to explain away the last election and put that behind him and not fully being able to do that, not really being able to then move forward. And so that was, that was kind of, it was just a sort of an uneasy thing to be in his presence. You could kind of feel the difficult position he's in because of that.
Yeah. Do you think that's because of what people have said to him, or do you think that's because he's trying to figure out how to position himself for a future run? Like, does he go around and everybody's like, "Hey, you screwed this up. You let us down. You failed at this. If it weren't for you."
Well, I think it's just because they lost, and he it was a. He had to make a calculated decision whether to accept the invitation to be on the ticket or not.
Mm-hmm.
He accepted it. They lost, and he might not be able to come back from that nationally. You think back to sure. Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. Where's Tim Kaine these days on the national scene? I don't know if he wants to be on the national scene anymore, but certainly he's...
doing Saturday Night Live appearances about nobody knowing who he is. Yeah.
Okay.
That was the bit. My name's Tim Kaine. I ran for vice president. Everybody's like, "Who is this man?" No idea. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So he's having fun with his image, I guess.
And so Tim Walz is, Governor Walz is really trying to keep that from happening. But, the pull of down on him of being on a losing ticket, I think, is going to be very, very hard to fight against.
What does he say went wrong?
Where
did he
really
fail?
Because
he says, hey, we did not deliver. He's, I want to own this. I want to own the fact that we made mistakes. What does he say those mistakes were?
Well, he doesn't seem to really have a coherent speech figured out for that yet. He did talk a lot about, communication failures. He has been kind of trotting this narrative out there that maybe he was too tightly controlled and everything during the campaign. But you sit there listening to that and you think, you were the vice presidential candidate. You weren't the presidential candidate. So, of course, you were controlled to some extent. You should be. My main takeaway from it was really there just wasn't – if people are looking for, him having identified this one thing that can totally explain, why they lost and why he could be more successful in the future, no, he doesn't seem to have that figured out yet.
Jonathan Ellis, anything about as we watch people unpack an election after it's over that's useful? In general, are there things that you think are useful in election postmortems?
Seth alluded to one part of this was he had to make the calculated risk of whether to accept the VP slot. And really, I think that he tied himself to that anchor because, I mean, I this is my opinion, and I'm going to maybe piss some people off here, but Kamala Harris was a terrible candidate, and he kind of he tied himself to that. And so he's got to get beyond what was a very poorly run campaign, which he probably really had very little making to, you know, wasn't his campaign necessarily, but he's associated with it.
Why was she a terrible candidate?
Give
me two reasons why you think Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, was a terrible candidate.
Yeah, she had very poor communication skills. I don't think she could, Seth Wright talked about how Walz is working on this speech. Her speeches were terrible. She just could not communicate. I think that the campaign aired very early when it associated itself with a lot of celebrities that turned on elites that regular people kind of are, you know, don't find, they can't relate to those people. So that was a very early era. If you remember this, the campaign, they brought in, you know, movie star singers and TV, you know, Oprah was, and regular people don't relate to that. So that was a big campaign right out at the gate, in my opinion.
Donald Trump is not known as a smooth communicator.
True.
So saying she's a terrible communicator in a campaign against someone who has communications. Jamie's not what we would traditionally consider an effective communicator. Obviously, he communicates his message and he holds the spotlight very well. But I guess that's what I'm wondering. Like, why is she a bad communicator when her opponent communicates in the way that he does?
I think that he ran a more disciplined campaign in the sense that he did stick to the issues that won the day, immigration, things of that nature. And in that sense, of course, you can pick apart his speeches and say he says these stupid, outlandish things.
I didn't say that.
He does at times.
To be clear, so, I did not say he was stupid.
He does.
Yeah.
But we could go back and dissect some of her speeches, and it's just sometimes it goes into. She just was a poor communicator.
So let's talk about candidates for governor now here in South Dakota, because we're seeing early announcements and communication strategies, which will continue to follow these candidates. Jonathan Ellis, you want to start with John Hansen, Speaker Hansen, and. How he came out of the gate making his announcement and what we're seeing early on from him.
He's been a known kind of quantity in the, you know, conservative, social conservative universe for quite a while now. I think he's probably in his 10th year in the legislature. Been very prominent on abortion issues for a long time. The pipeline stuff, very early against pipeline, or at least eminent domain. And so he has a lot of street cred in that community, and he came out very early. And at his announcement at the Military Heritage Alliance here in Sioux Falls, it was very, very well attended. And a lot of the rank-and-file conservative activists were there. Now you've got Toby Doden getting into the race, and he's sort of, you know, drinking from the same reservoir there. A lot of people who are in politics will know who Toby Doden is just because he's wealthy and he's financed some campaigns. But he doesn't have the broader name recognition maybe that John Hansen does. And so Toby, you've seen now, as he announced, he has since now he's been on TV. He's got to try to win people over with his message, people who don't know who he is. And so that's why you've seen it's very early for TV ads for governor. But that's kind of the reality that he's got to face. He's got to introduce himself to voters who don't know who he is.
Yeah. Seth, do people know who John Hansen is? West River?
I
mean, political people
no.
do. People who are, you know, people who are fundraising, the political class, if you will, know who John Hansen is. But that's been my question, Mark. Doesn't he also have a challenge with name recognition going into this?
Sure. And of course, you know, this is difficult to gauge. And I think as journalists, I'm always trying to keep myself aware of this and my reporters. And we are talking about a Republican primary here. So obviously,
right.
you know, I mean, these are engaged. People are going to vote in that are engaged in Republican politics and stuff. But there will also be quite a few who aren't. This is going to be, you know, an election year that's going to have a lot of big races, so bring a lot of people out. So I think that we as journalists, you know, people who are embedded in this every day, we tend to overestimate how much people are known outside of the bubble that we operate in as journalists and people who are inside of this all the time. So, I certainly don't think John Hansen or Toby Doden have, you know, name recognition with the general populace, with the general electorate, even maybe with a lot of Republicans.
Yeah. I'm not sure Governor Roden does. After right, I interviewed right. Governor Roden, I was telling people I interviewed the guy, and they didn't know his name. And they asked me again and again, who is he? Who is he? Who is he? And I was really surprised by that at the time. I was like, how do you not know who Larry Roden is? But to your point, Seth, a lot of people are not living the lives that the three of us are living. Right. Where we're,
how many
you know,
people still think Kristi Noem is the governor right. of South Dakota? You might be shocked
she's,
by that.
She's not going to be on the ballot, everybody. You know, so there's going to be someone else.
But I'll tell you, you bring up Roden, and the one great advantage that he has, obviously, with Noem leaving and him being installed, you know, from lieutenant governor to governor, is if you see what he's been doing ever since he took office. He's been traveling the state, you know, on the state's dime, as he's allowed to do as governor, you know, doing official business, of course, but also it's partially campaigning. And he's been to towns all across the state, great and small. He's met hundreds, thousands of people probably since he took office. Mm-hmm. And so he's been basically campaigning from day one and you know, building that name recognition slowly and quietly, but doing it. Yeah. And as Jonathan mentioned, you know, how does Toby Doden do that? Well, he's going to have to spend a lot of money to do that. And if you're going to spend
a
lot
bus,
of money,
right? He's got a big bus, right? He's got a money. Yeah.
And if you're going to spend a lot of money this early, you know, a year out from the primary.
Sure.
Wow. I hope you have a lot of money.
So Ellis, what's the strategy here? Because I mean, some of big names who people have predicted will enter this race have not yet entered the race. Q Representative Dusty Johnson, who everybody says he's going to enter, but we don't know when, we don't know if. So do you get out there? Or, I mean, is that part of the strategy? Get out there early, get out there really fast, build up name recognition, you know, establish yourself before he ever comes and announces, or he might not.
Well, I don't know that Dusty Johnson needs to worry about. I mean, he's
no, I'm talking about the other people. Yeah, I don't think Dusty Johnson needs to worry about it.
I mean, Toby Doden, I think, has.
Does Toby Doden need to worry about when Dusty Johnson enters the race? Does John Hansen have to worry about that?
No, I think they have to worry about each other.
Okay.
Because they know that there will be a Dusty Johnson-esque, if not Dusty Johnson himself, Dusty Johnson-esque candidate that they'll have to face. I mean, this is a fight for a much more, and people don't know who Larry Roden is. Your Republican primary voters do.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more engaged. And this is the universe you're worrying about. You're not worrying about the people who don't know who Larry Roden is. And that, you know, that's a different world. That's a general election world, if they vote at all, for that matter. So this is where where Seth says, the voters out West River probably don't know who he is, but the ones who are politically active know who John Hansen is, and some of them will know who Toby Doden is just because he's been financing campaigns through his political action committee.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, he needs to get out early. Dusty Johnson, I mean, you know, no.
Why do they run against Roden at all?
Why are they running against Roden?
Right. There's not a ton of daylight between all of these candidates, policy-wise. There are a lot of, I guess, in the Venn diagram, there's lots of places that they're similar. Why challenge the incumbent who's popular, has the advantage of being the incumbent? Why spend a bunch of money to try to, I mean, if you would be happy with how the state is being run in a lot of ways. Why do people throw their hat in the ring at this point?
Well, I think there are people who think it could be run more conservatively. If you ask the John Hansen and Toby Doden world.
We'll have John Hansen on later in the show.
Later in the show.
We did ask him.
Yeah, you know, so, and look, let's, I mean, and historically.
And we will invite, we have not invited Toby Doden yet, but he'll be next. We like to give the announcement and then a little bit of time and then the invitation. So
historically, a lieutenant governor who took over from a governor in office have not been, you know, strong candidates necessarily. Hmm. I mean, they haven't gone on to win their nomination.
Yeah.
And in some cases, their nomination, and certainly in general, you know, I think probably in at least the two most recent cases that I can think of, Seth, maybe I'm not to put him on the spot, but I don't even think they won their party nominations. Hmm. So
lots of challenges ahead, Seth.
Well, and I would add to that, I think to answer your question, where is it that people are viewing this as an open seat? You know, Kristi Noem resigned, and the lieutenant governor came in, and you could call him an incumbent, you know, sort of, not really, but kind of. And I think people viewed this from the beginning as an open seat. And I think myself, a lot of people underestimated Governor Roden's ability to campaign for the seat. I think a lot of us, as Jonathan maybe alluded to, were reflecting back to when Walter Dale Miller took over as governor after the death of Governor Mickelson, and Bill Janklow came in and said, thanks, Walter Dale, but, you know, I'll take it from here. Right. Just sort of pushed him aside. And I think a lot of people were thinking that was Roden's mm-hmm. fate, and he showed that, you know, maybe he's going to be a little bit stronger than that. And so that has maybe made it more difficult for people who thought they were going to have an easier path, but I don't think it caused anybody to say, oh, I'm not going to run now, because open seats don't come along very often,
right.
Obviously.
I think that's the answer. That's an insightful answer. They view it as an open seat, and those just don't come along very often. Now's your chance.
So if you're going to take your shot,
take
it now.
Yeah, interesting. But I agree with you, Seth, that Larry Roden has come out very strong. So anybody who is underestimating him probably is regretting underestimating him as a candidate, I would say.
Yeah, and I think
he's a strong candidate for governor. Yeah.
Immediately, you know, during the session when he chose Tony Van Huysen to be his lieutenant governor, and people thought, oh, whoa, that's, you know, if Tony Van Huysen is signing on with Larry Roden,
right.
And people thought maybe he would be aligned more with a Dusty Johnson or somebody like that, you know, bringing back some old Dewyard administration officials to serve in his cabinet, having a very organized, aggressive schedule getting out in the state. Yeah, I think he was, from the get-go, he if you were paying attention, he put people on notice that, you know, he's probably going to run, and he's probably going to run hard.
I would say the one unknown in all of this is because of the state's campaign finance reporting requirements, we are not going to know how strong he is in that department, and that's a very critical department.
Fundraising.
Whether you like it or not, you need money, and you need a lot of money. And so we will have to wait and see. That's you know, it is. I am impressed with how he has gotten out and under the guise of economic opportunity and toured the state. And I think he has been strong in that department. Where we don't know, that again, the unknown is that translating to campaign donations?
Yeah. I've noticed how often he comes out and distinguishes himself from Kristi Noem, but yet never distances himself from Kristi Noem. Again and again, he credits her for what she did. He connects his name to hers. He is and forever will be her partner in politics. But then he'll make a sort of a wry comment like, well, maybe we communicate a little bit better, or if not better, a little bit differently, chuckle, chuckle, and makes it, I'm not her. But yet, politically, we are very much aligned. And I think that's smart politicking as well.
Plus, he'll drink a beer, whereas Kristi Noem wouldn't have.
Okay. You know, not something I knew.
He's,
nor do I care if either one of them drinks a beer.
One of the regular guys who will sit down and have a beer.
We'll leave it there with the regular guys. I'll step off. Seth Tupper, Jonathan Ellis, thanks so much.
I'm going to go get a beer. Thanks.